You are watching the Starkey Multifamily Podcast, and with me today I have Jamie Gruber. Jamie is a successful meetup host. He's a successful apartment owner and podcast does everything. What don't you do, Jamie? But so, Jamie, thanks for coming on.
And, thank you. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure. It's an honor. Thank you.
Why don't you tell me a little bit about how you got started into multifamily. What steered you down that path?
You know, probably like a lot of people, the whole real estate thing started with Rich Dad. But probably like a lot of people my age, at least, I bought at the wrong time when I bought my first property. So yes, so I bought this property, and I'm from New York originally, bought it in upstate New York. And I did the whole like, yeah, hey, take 20% down with one loan, and then 80% of the, you know, the rest of it, take it with another loan. And you don't need to worry about PMI. Cool. I had no idea what that meant, but sure, let's do that. So I buy this property, and you know, it's in a market that's not like a big up down market, but at that point it was hot like everywhere. So, you know, you could buy anything anytime and overpay for it like I did, and banks would let you get away with it. So did that. And you know, a couple of years later, actually moved with my job to Boston now. And I this was like 08 when I moved. So I bought it in like 05, 06. So kind of right at the peak. 08, I move, and everything's starting to crumble. Late 08, almost 09. Everything's starting to crumble. So I can't sell the place. And this place was just this burden. It felt like this albatross. I was renting it out, making a little bit on it, but it was more of a pain if I got calls. And thinking back, it was probably like, you know, one call a month on average. It wasn't a lot, but just for some reason, when I did, it was like, this is such a burden. This is such an awful property. Who would ever want to do this? And, you know, I attempted a couple of times to sell it in the next couple of years to no avail, and ended up just holding on to it for a while. And I rented an apartment in the Boston area, and eventually bought a house in the Boston area. Then I reread Rich Dad. So I read it when I was like 23. I reread it, you know, around 35. And when I read it the second time, it was like, oops. Duh, had I figured this stuff out 10 years ago? Like, it just didn't, like, I got it when I first read it, but I didn't get it, you know? So I started looking at things very differently from a real estate perspective. I'm like, you know what? Bigger pockets and all these different things that were out there, started just consuming them, as a lot of people do. And like, you know what, I got to go duplexes, triplex, like, you know, a single family is not good. I took that single family and kind of converted it so that it's in my mind an asset, and financially like refied it to make it an asset. And I still own it, although we're trying to sell it now again. And then I doubled down. I bought two more duplexes, both distressed, about a year and a half ago. And we went through, I mean, like a complete remodel of these properties, got rents way up. Like, we went in on one of them, the upstairs was 400, the downstairs was 755. Now the upstairs is 900, the downstairs is 1200. Just great, great upside on the rents. And we're about to refi those properties here actually right now. The bank is going through that stuff, which is always fun. So after buying those properties a couple of years ago, it was like, all right, this is great, but man, that's a lot of work to buy two. Like, I'm looking for more duplexes, and how many can I really close on at one time? And then you got this whole, you know, 10 limit on Fannie Mae property. So decided, you know, I'm going to go multifamily. I'm going to try to source multifamily, which at that point I had moved to Michigan. So this was about 2 years ago. I moved to Michigan and started joining communities that were focused on multifamily. And really kind of geeked out on all the content and learned quite a bit, still a ton to learn. Reed, I talked to you and I, like 5 minutes, I've got exponentially more knowledge than I did before that. You're playing up here, which is awesome. But I'm learning and just, you know, decided to go down the multifamily path. So that's the long story. I can get into how kind of the property came to be and everything, but that's the broad strokes on how I arrived at multifamily.
Yeah, that's, you know, I seem to hear a very common theme amongst successful people is, you know, they fall down and then they get up. So you say you bought that property at the wrong time. It was a headache and, you know, just a bunch of a pain for you. And the difference that I see in the successful and I don't want to say unsuccessful, but other people.
It was a struggle. Yeah.
Yeah. Is your, you know, your ability to say, hey, this was not a good deal, but I still want to do it. I can do it. I just know now what not to do. And it's such a big difference than man, this real estate stuff is terrible. It's such a pain in the butt. I'm never doing it again.
Yeah.
And I think that's truly the difference in any business or anything that you want to do. So,
yeah, I look, and still to this day, I mean, I'm 21 total units. I mean, there are guys out there playing in much, much bigger backyards with this stuff, but I'll get kicked in the teeth once a week on some of this stuff, right? Something happens. All of a sudden somebody's moving out that we weren't expecting to move out. Had to unfortunately kick somebody out that I like a lot, but it just wasn't working, right? As far as the landlord tenant relationship. A furnace goat, something, right? Like some sort of issue pops up that you didn't expect. Here's your new tax bill. Whatever. So there's always something, but to your point, yeah, you know, I think you have two options at that point. You either, you know, kind of take a deep breath and kind of try to figure out and move forward, or you just give up. And I've done the giving up part a lot in my life, and it just, you know, at a certain point gave up on giving up, I guess. So that's where I am now.
So you, it's a 16 unit, correct?
Correct.
And you did that with, was it a partner? Just one partner?
Three actually. So the partner I met in one of these groups, these multifamily groups I mentioned. So I met him, he was investing in Detroit in single family. I had my portfolio in New York, obviously. We got together and, you know, we did a couple things. We spent a lot of time together. We did disc profiles together just to see how we kind of mesh up and all of that stuff. And, you know, what we both got was, without trying, we had the same goal. We had the same mindset, one of like abundance and all of that good stuff. And we had complementary skill sets, especially from a communication perspective with disc. I'm this guy out in front, blah, 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 blah. He's the, you know, give him a spreadsheet, he's happy for 12 hours kind of guy, right? So we offset each other really well. And I mean, even little things like, you know, I was a little stressed the other day and I talked to him at like 9 o'clock. He's like, what you doing? I'm like, I'm going to get some ice cream. He's like, not at 9 o'clock. Don't do that to yourself. You know, the little things like that you just, we kind of pick each other up. So the two of us together partnered up with a couple that had this 16 unit deal. So it's four of us in this deal that we own right now.
So they already owned it, you said?
No, they didn't. So it's funny. This property is in Pinckney, Michigan, and there was 16 units listed in Pinckney that we made an offer on. My partner and I made an offer on it for like 820 or 825, and that was the max we would pay for it, 825. It goes off market. Somebody else bought it. Somebody else got it. Like, all right, whatever. We got outbid. It was listed for more. Then at my meetup, which I can get into as much as you want me to, this couple came over and said, hey, we got this 16 unit in Pinckney. Now, for those of you who don't know where Pinckney, Michigan is, it's nowhere. It's this little nothing town, maybe 3,000 people. If there's 16 units that they were talking about, that we made an offer on, and then 16 units that these folks were telling us about, it's like, well, that's the market. That's everything. Like, that's all of the units in Pinckney, I think. There's not many more than that, if there are any. But what was interesting was it was a 32 unit community, two different owners. So somebody split it up at some point, two different owners, about the same age, older mom and pop. One listed it, and we made an offer on that for $825 and got outbid. The other one didn't list it. And this couple, our partners, had learned about this owner maybe wanting to sell, and were able to get to him some time ago off market and just start to sort of cultivate the relationship. And when it came time to close, they were looking for partners that had experience, I think some capital as well as net worth, that we could combine and buy the two buildings, 16 units total, and go in it that way. So they didn't own it, but they had it pretty much like negotiated for the most part, and were looking for, you know, the right partnership to take the property down.
Okay. Do you mind sharing how you structured that partnership?
Yeah. So it's 25% each for all four of us in the partnership. We drafted an operating agreement that goes through, you know, some really specifics about what happens if it dissolves, what happens if one of us sells, what is the role of our spouses, or in my partner's case, my direct partner's case, future spouses, all of that good stuff. But that's the gist of it. It's 25% each. We did it in an LLC, and we divided the roles up front, where one is in charge of sort of the maintenance and upkeep, one is in charge of sort of the administrative side, and then two of us are in charge of the overall management of the property, including, you know, kind of back end system type of stuff. So that's how we did it.
That's a great partnership. And you pointed something out that I think is worth mentioning, is, you know, although that everybody was in agreement in the beginning of the deal, you still got it in writing and put everything down, and I assume got an attorney involved and wrote it all out. But that is so critically important, because everybody gets along and agrees in the beginning of a deal. But, you know, every type of deal, it's possible that disagreements can happen. And it's good to have that in writing and know how that's going to play out, so that there's a master agreement that says, hey, no, this is what we agreed on 3 years ago. You know, it's time to sell. We agreed that's what we're doing. And, you know, whether you want to or not, that's what we're doing.
Yeah. And I'll give another tip on that. Like, you know, networking to me is essential. It's key. You mentioned about owning a meetup group. I mean, the benefits of that I couldn't anticipate, but networking is so essential, because within that you'll drag in people that have a lot of experience. So when the initial OA operating agreement that we had, I was talking to this guy, his name is Joseph Goslin. He's a big syndicator. I think he's out of Texas. He was like, well, tell me about your OA. So I went through it. He's like, oh, so you're saying if you dissolve the partnership or somebody wants to sell, it sounded so locked down to me. Like, you know, they have to do this, they have to do that. We had all these things. He's like, yeah, well, what I hear is that they could sell it to anybody they want at market. And now that person buying it may overpay, and they're going to expect a hell of a lot of performance out of you. I'm like, wow, I never thought of that. So talking to him and getting him to kind of help me craft and shape the wording and everything was really big.
Interesting. So, I also like that you talked about you met them all through networking. I thought you were talking about the networking and, you know, how you got into them. You know, I thought that was very interesting. I don't know if you want to talk a little bit more about the value of that, because I think that's important.
Networking to me is everything. And I know that's so cliched, like, you know, get to know people, your network is your net worth, all that good stuff. But when we started out pursuing multifamily, we did all, I think, the right things. We put together a business plan, like a credibility book, what we want to do, right? Made it really pretty, sent it off to brokers, sent it off to property managers, sent it off to bankers to really begin our networking and saying, hey, this is us, love to spend some time with you. And we got unbelievable feedback, right? Wow, we only get tire kickers. We don't get people with plans. This is really clear. I know exactly what you want. This is great. Let's do lunch. And we did. I paid for lunch because it was great to meet them. I had my whole questions and everything. I mean, like, check by the book, right? Like, this is how you build your team. This is how you get everybody into your sphere. And then they went, like, especially brokers, they just kind of went silent on me, right? Or when they did send me something, it's like, yeah, we're looking for anywhere from, you know, 10 to 20 units. Like, well, here's a 300 units. Like, no, nowhere near our criteria. Like, I thought the plan made it clear that you were excited about the plan. So, you know, brokers are great, but, you know, if you're not a proven closer, I've learned, and you've heard this and I've learned this, I think you're just, you know, you're low on the priority list. So for us, that was the genesis of creating a meetup, right? Was, all right, well, let's put ourselves out there. Let's, you know, build a community. We didn't see a lot of multifamily meetup groups that were out there, at least in this market at that point. And let's see what kind of comes of that. It'll be great. We can maybe get brokers there and build credibility for ourselves in that way. And what I've learned from it is it's sort of circumventing a lot of the traditional means of finding deals or financing or whatever. So on a regular basis now, I'll get a Facebook message, an email, sometimes a call with, hey, listen, I just went under contract on a property. I was given this property as well. It's 24 units or whatever. I'm all tied up over here. If you want it, it's yours. And literally, these are real off market, like listed by a Keller Williams agent, not even a commercial broker type properties. Am I getting them all? No, but I'm able to go see them. I'm able to put in an LOI. I'm able to kind of, you know, get the experience and the first rights, if you will, to some of these properties that I wouldn't get with a broker right now, not until we build a much larger portfolio. But also, we brought at least one broker into our world. I think there's another one in the community. And that broker is sending me every so often something like, hey, I've sent this to just a few buyers. You're one of them. Let me know what you think. And, you know, I'm going to list it in a week or something like that. So networking is huge. It brought me that 16 unit. Those folks, our partners were in our meetup and, you know, got to know us through that. And we're currently under contract on another 22 unit property in Cleveland. And same thing, that came through our networking group. So I think the key to networking is you have to give and give. And then when you're done giving, give more. Like, whatever it is you can provide value-wise to others is the key. Don't expect a return. I honestly didn't. I just wanted more to, like, build credibility. But man, the return so far, I mean, I don't have 100,000 units to show for it, but the return so far as the opportunities that I'm getting has been tremendous and humbling, to be honest with you.
Yeah. And I think that's a return that comes years later too. So once once you start moving into those really big deals, you're going to need a lot of people who know who you are to start raising $1 million per deal or more. You know, I think what you're doing now is perfectly aligned for where your goals are set. So
yeah, I think so. I hope so. But Jim Carrey, everybody knows Jim Carrey, did a commencement speech for some university he graduated from. You can pull it up on YouTube. It's like 26 minutes long. And like at the 23 minute mark, he says this line that I think is great. The whole speech is awesome. It's funny, but it's intuitive and all this stuff, or insightful, not intuitive. But at like the 23 minute mark, he says something along the lines of, the way I figure it is, you tell the universe what you want, you take action toward it, and you let go of how it's going to happen or whatever. And that's kind of what you just said. Tell the universe what you want. Hey, I'm looking to scale my multifamily business. Take action. I've got this meetup and I'm just going to provide as much value and content as I possibly can, interact with members because I enjoy it and I feel like people get value out of that. And I'm letting go of, like you said, maybe it's a year from now, maybe it's two, whatever, but I'm going to let go of what that does and how or if it returns to me. I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. And yeah, I agree with you that you kind of lay the foundation and then, you know, at some point something happens.
So you got that 16 unit. We kind of just talked about, you got it under contract, but you know, from that time when you were approached by the couple and they said, hey, we've got this under contract, they had it under contract or LOI?
No, they had it fairly well negotiated with the seller. That was pretty much it.
Kind of like a verbal.
Pretty much.
Okay. So yeah. Tell us how that process evolved into the closing of that.
Yeah. So I toured the property with this couple, Derek and Kelly. We toured the property. We actually met the owner that day. It was like a Sunday. His attorney was with him and we just went over to the attorney's office and just started chatting. It was kind of, for me, it was like, oh, okay, this just got real. It was like, all right, yeah, I'll go look at this property. And all of a sudden we're in the room talking about like final price and everything. You know, we attempted some seller financing with the guy. He initially kind of considered it. But then, you know, he's like, ah, listen, I don't want to deal with it. Unfortunately, he and his wife were both, ill. They weren't doing well. Older couple, very sweet, but they just wanted to be done with it. They didn't want to have to worry about, you know, whatever, like foreclosure one day or what. They didn't want to worry about it. So so we ended up agreeing on a price. It's funny, the couple, Derek and Kelly, had negotiated. There were two 8-unit buildings. They negotiated the first building to a price. When they brought us in is when it was like, okay, we have enough buying power to get both buildings now. But in the between that, the other two buildings sold for more than $825. I don't know how much it sold for. So he knew that now and he wanted more for the second building. And you know, true to his word, he's like, listen, I've already honored the price in the first building. I can't remember what it was, but the second building, I gotta get closer to X, whatever it was. And all told, the agreed price was $755, is what we bought it for. So we went through that. Derek and Kelly had a bank that they had networked with that they were ready, you know, pretty much had fairly decent terms in place. But we did try to source other lending. So the lending we got, the terms we got were good, not great. I mean, they got us our first deal, so they're good enough. But yeah, we would have loved to have gotten a little more interest only up front or maybe a little bit longer of an amortization period. But when we did try to kind of source lending kind of, I don't know, after or during the due diligence phase. And what I learned, didn't know this, was a lot of banks were interested in giving the terms we wanted, but because of the size of the market and the lack of comparables, they were afraid of that. So we sort of like, you know, banks were like, yeah, oh yeah, we offer everything you want, we offer. And then like, oh, where? We can't really determine rents there because there's nobody else renting there. So they kind of shied away. So this local bank that we found, or that Derek and Kelly found, is who we utilized for it. So, you know, from there it was drafting the operating agreement. It was, you know, making sure that we were clear on our post-transition strategy, like what we were going to do, where were we going to spend money first? Like it needs a roof. It needs, you know, common area upgrades. You know, we negotiated a wash contract, a laundry contract. So when we took over the property, we would have, you know, nice new laundry units in both buildings. And then we talked about like unit turn and tried to really figure out what would our budget be with our capital for what we could do with unit turns. And again, we probably, I'm sure we're low on that, you know, like it's a learning experience for us. Like we didn't budget enough for unit turns given what we're learning we need to do with some of this property. But we're also learning how to get a little bit more efficient, I guess you could say, with what we're spending. But that was the gist. So once we got through that, honestly, it went pretty smoothly. The inspection was good. The appraisal came back higher than the purchase price. The environmental was good. The phase one was perfect. No issues there. And really, yeah, we met in Royal Oak, closed on it a couple days before Christmas, had a drink, and then here we are.
That's a great story. So what are your plans for, well, let's, before I get to that, let's talk about, so you said there was some issues with, misguessing the cost of turning, you know, and then you talked about, you got a wash contract, you negotiated that. What other things, or, you know, maybe a little more detail on that, but what other things surprised you or did you have to negotiate or?
Yeah, I got to think of surprises. There's plenty, but for some reason it doesn't jump to my mind. I'll think of them as I talk. One of our partners actually called the dumpster company that we have. So it's with the other 16-unit building, the other owner, we split the dumpsters and we actually share the power on a pole. So there's a little bit of crossover between us. Like we pay for one dumpster, they pay for the other, whatever. But the dumpster contract, we called. One of my partners called and said, hey, you know, we're paying this. I don't remember what it was. That feels high. They're like, oh yeah, no, it is high. But the prior owner just never called and negotiated. So, yeah. And they literally cut the bill in half, like 30-second phone call. We figured out like $10,000-$12,000 in value on the property. Just if you go with a cap rate calculation on it. Right. So that was one. Two was, maybe this is a surprise, like mom and pop, you always hear that term, mom and pop apartments. Holy cow, they exist. This thing had, so he would have leases from, we had leases from 1999. Rents never changed from 1999. Wow. He would sign, I don't know why, he would sign a 3-month lease with every new tenant, 3 months, and then let it go month to month. He just wouldn't, I don't know why it was 3 months, not a year, but that's what he did. And then his practice was, he wanted it to be like, he didn't want to deal with it. So he really targeted like more like retired, a little older. He had two bedrooms in the building that he didn't advertise or charge as such. He advertised them as one beds because he didn't want to have kids or anything like that that create, you know, issues with the building or whatever. So we were looking at like, well, all right, so we just got, you know, two units that are underpriced and being priced at a one bed. We can market as two beds, and one of them turned and we got way more rent for it. So that's a good thing. And like I said, these leases were just, they were just crazy. So those were surprising things, I think, that we ran into. I feel like there was one other thing that jumped in and jumped out of my head, but those are the biggies at this point.
Okay. What was there any particular reason the turns were more than expected?
The turns weren't more than expected. So we went in with two vacancies. We went in, oh, the cost, I mean, you mean, I'm sorry, not the number, oh, the cost. I think it was maybe a little optimism on our part about what we would have to do with kitchens in particular. Like, you know, we went through, we looked at them and it was like, oh, you know what? We don't need to pull these out. We can paint and put new countertops and do it that way. And, you know, really limit our expense to like five, maybe 6,000 versus 7,000-9,000 per unit or whatever it might be. But what we learned was that while they looked decent, when you started like really like handling these cabinets, they were starting to crumble in our hands. Like they were, you know, original to the building from the 70s, all laminate, leaks and everything else throughout the time, caused some issues. So we've replaced two kitchens. A third one, we were able to paint. They look great. Paint and put new countertops on them. So that was probably the biggie. It was just, you know, not accounting for a couple of things that we thought would be a little bit easier considering the class of building.
So do you have any exciting plans coming up for this particular unit?
I do. For the building? Yeah, yeah. So the exciting stuff with this is we bought it in December. We're sitting here in April right now, May, I guess now. And we have one unit that – so we went in. We did all new leases, ton of learning going in and talking to tenants. So first off, you know, again, tip that I learned at least is, you know, always remember it's a people business. You know, these folks have lived there for a long time. So we went in, got to know them a little bit, went through their units, whatever they needed maintenance wise, you know, within reason, we took care of, replace a faucet, take care of this, take care of that. You know, we cleaned everything up, put in new carpets and painted the common areas, really spruced the place up a little bit. We imposed some rules around smoking, around, you know, clutter in the common area, brand new washer and dryer that we brought in. And to your point, we negotiated, I think it was a 55% split our way. I think it was 55-45 us. So we get 55% of the revenue on the washer dryers, and we don't pay for them. They take care of the maintenance, and we signed a contract. I forget the length on it. So we had that, and then so people business. So we, you know, dealing with the tenants or the residents and making sure that they felt, you know, good about what was happening. Clear communication was big. So we signed leases with every one of them but one. He moved out at a higher price. So we raised rents anywhere. It was the same rent for everybody, anywhere from $80 to $150 a month, depending on who you, what, you know, what your, which tenant it was. We filled two other units that were, I think one was $200 more, one was $300 more, because it was a two bedroom than the previous rent that they were getting, and not bad. And then we have one more unit vacant right now that's just getting finished that will fill this month, that will rent for about $200 more than it was rented before. And have another one that's going to be going vacant at the end of the month. And that one will rent, you know, probably over $200 more, because we're learning that the market may be a little higher than we thought as far as what we can get for rents.
Yeah, I would imagine Pinckney would be relatively high for rents, but.
So we're learning.
Yeah.
So okay. Even that, and it's good. It's a good mistake to make, right? We went in probably more conservative than we realized the market would allow for, but we get a ton of interest at our price point. And when I floated a higher price point to a few interested residents, they're like, oh yeah, that's fine. So yeah, we're trying to find that right price.
Yeah. I mean, the housing prices are quite high in Pinckney. So I would imagine the rents would kind of go with that, but
yep.
So
seems like it.
So beyond the 16 unit, where are your plans moving forward?
So I have a couple things that I really want to do. So we're looking to acquire more property, of course. We recently created a fund, hired an attorney, created a fund so that we can raise capital and syndicate property. We're going to try to be a little bit unique, a little bit creative with our syndication. Not unique isn't the right word, because other people are doing it this way, but we're looking to do it on a shorter term to return capital to folks and leave a little bit less, well, actually quite a bit less equity with them. But so it's like you put your money in, you get it back much more quickly than you would in a standard syndication. And, you know, we refi and you keep a percentage of the property forever, right? So you just have a part of this property as long as it's held. So we're working through that. I'm all about this meetup stuff. You mentioned like all the stuff I do, and I appreciate you saying that. Like, what don't you do? Plenty. But the podcast that we've done, the virtual meetup, the brand, this multifamily and more brand that we've developed here in Michigan. We got, I don't know, 600 members almost in Michigan. And, you know, we've branched out to six other spots around the country, and we have, you know, hundreds more members between those communities and growing. So, you know, really diving into that and meeting people and networking and giving whatever I can to them, whether it's a conversation, a consultation, a discussion, content, information, our business plan, you know, whatever people are looking for, you know, happy to help out with. And just cultivating that community has been is high on my priority list.
Well, I could definitely say your content has high value.
Oh, thank you.
The stuff you do is definitely inspiring to me, at least. You know, I mean, I've seen some of the stuff you've done. The content is awesome. So I definitely want to recommend anybody watching or listening that they check you out. So how would they reach out to you, Jamie?
So the best way is to go to our website, which is cfassetgroup.com, www.cf, like cashflow, assetgroup.com. We'll have a multifamily and more webpage soon here as well. So you could even try that, and, you know, hopefully it works by the time this is put out. Those are probably the best two ways. Our contact information is in there, and you can get links to all of our multifamily and more pages and utilize whatever group. Nobody. Do whatever group. Sorry, kids.
It's okay. Yeah.
Join whatever group, whatever market you're in, and you know, we're happy to have you there.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you coming on, Jamie, and We'll let you attend to your family there.
Oh, I know. Sorry about that. And I'm honored. Honestly, Reed, I love what you're doing. You and I had a great conversation recently. You talked through, you know, how you go through and analyze property. And I mean, man, more of that, because you're tuned in on the underwriting side on everything multifamily. So for folks watching, if you haven't, you know, gone to Reed's group, Starkey Multifamily, I mean, it's there's a lot of great content there, and Reed knows what the heck he's talking about. So I learned a ton from 10 minutes of talking to him. I'm sure your community will get a ton out of it.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you so much.